Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 251, which is actually a panel that we recorded over at Noman for the ASAI Architecture in Perspective conference that happened earlier this year. So just for those of you in that need to know, basically because this was recorded as a panel, the audio is going to be a little bit different, but it's pretty cool. And if you guys want to actually see the video of the actual event, just go to our page and you'll be able to see it there. So people that were on this panel, I was the moderator of it, which was really nice of them to let me do that. People who are on the panel are Joy Lea. You guys remember Joy? She's been on a couple of times, right, Kristen?
Mm-hmm.
She's been on this podcast a few times and really cool to have her. So she is over at AR Wall and she worked on The Lion King. Also Mike Golden, who is over at Kitbash 3D and Three Marks. And then Eric The Brush Descombes, who is the founder of Lexicon, a very well-known ArcVis company. And a very outspoken person, Nick Hyatt, who was a concept artist, worked on Star Wars The Force Awakens, Bella Ekman, who is an architectural visualization artist, and of course, Megan Labowska. Sorry, Megan, if I got your name last name wrong, but she is a creative media leader at Gensler also. You guys all know Gensler. So, Kristen, tell me, what were some of the fun things that you liked about this talk? You remember anything cool about it?
Yeah. No, I really liked it. It was interesting listening.
You were in
everyone.
The audience, too.
I thought like one thing that was cool is how I think Joy said it, how 3D connects movies, video games, and ArcVis by storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's connected in some way.
Yep.
And then they talk a lot about how VR is like great for ArcVis because it tells a story to the client and helps the client see the vision, what they're trying to create. And there's the one about the soccer stadium.
Yes, that was the Gensler project. Mm-hmm. It was also interesting. It gets quite heated. Eric is known in the industry as being very disruptive person in terms of the conversation. I loved having him on. He's really cool. But he really sort of wanted us to all, you know, question whether VR is actually making architecture better or not. So I thought it was a very interesting conversation to have within the audience, et cetera. But also another cool thing is that we had people from different industries that sort of use similar tool sets and understanding how those different industries can influence each other. So it was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool. Okay, couple of announcements. Go ahead and why don't you tell us about some events going on.
All right, so the events coming up, you can find at chaosgroup.com/events. The first one, I think, I don't know if we talked about this one. It starts November 30th through December 1st.
Mm-hmm.
It's the CG event in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And you can join Chaos Group for exclusive insights on how V-Ray for Nuke helps Spider-Man Far From Home's visuals possible.
Nice.
And as well as broader analysis of hard compositing in blockbuster production.
I wonder if Mark Rienzo was involved, part of that, because I know Mark pretty well. I know he worked on that, so it was pretty cool. Anyway, what's the other stuff going on?
And the other one is our Undiscovered Student Rendering Challenge. We had this starting October 1st, and it will go until December 1st. You have a little bit longer to submit for it, and it's Explore Your Imagination and Render the Undiscovered, and you can find out about this on our Facebook page at facebook.com/chaosgroup.
Cool, very cool. I want to tell a couple people, there's a blog post that I wrote on caustics that came out earlier. You guys should totally check it out. It really gives people an insight about caustics. It's mainly based on the amazing work that's been done in Corona. So you guys should go check that out. A really cool thing. Another thing that I'm going to tell you is coming soon, we are going to be bringing out the RTX support. I have been very busy working with Phil and Vlado and a bunch of our developers and guys on testing some RTX stuff. And it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting. So you guys should totally check it out. So make sure to keep an eye out for all new releases of RTX support as well as blog support, blogs about it specifically. All right. That being said, where can people follow us?
You can go to facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast.
And you can go to our website directly, chaosgroup.com/CG Garage. And if you want to ask any questions or anything, labs@chaosgroup.com is our email. And don't forget to rate us and review us on Apple Podcast. That being said, please enjoy this amazing episode 251 on the ASAI over at the Noman School. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays In high dynamic range, we know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Hello, everyone. If you have seats, we're going to get started. First of all, thank you guys for joining us tonight in Hollywood at the Lenovo stage for this event, Architecture and Perspective, ArcViz Design for Entertainment. I'm Max Dayon. I'm the Director of Education at Noman. It's my pleasure to be hosting this event tonight. We have a great panel for you guys, so it should be pretty awesome. Today's event, like all of our events, are powered by Lenovo, so we want to give a special thanks to them. Without their support, we wouldn't be able to do these types of things, and it's the same equipment our students use to do their amazing art. So thank you, Lenovo, for your partnership. We also have another partner that we're really proud to have, which is Wacom. We'll be using their Cintiqs and their Studio Pros to help this presentation go along. So again, thank you. It's really great to have that kind of support from the industry. One real quick thing before we get going. If at any time you guys need to leave, try to be quiet, keep it down. With the restrooms and everything else you need is outside, and our staff will be more than happy to direct you. So this panel is presented by Kilograph and the American Society of Architectural Illustrators. And with that, I'm going to introduce our moderator for tonight. His name is Chris Nichols. So Chris is the director of the Chaos Group Lab and a host of CG Garage. Chris is a CG industry veteran and director of the Chaos Group Lab, I apologize. Registered trademark of Chaos Group. He can also be heard regularly as the host of the CG Garage podcast, which attracts nearly 20,000 weekly listeners. With a background in both VFX and design, Chris has worked for Gensler, Digital Domain, ImageWorks, Method Studios, and his credits include, but are not limited to, Maleficent, Oblivion, and Tron Legacy. So thank you for being here and moderating this event. Next up, one of our speakers is Joy Lee. She's a lead environment artist and CG art director at AR Wall. After that, we have Mike Golden, head of 3D at Kitbash 3D and founder of Three Marks. Next is Eric DeBroche de Gomes. He's the principal architect at Lexagon. And up after that is Nick Hyatt. He's the art director for Star Wars Force Awakens. Next up is Isabella Ekman. She is an architectural visualization artist. And last but not least is Megan Lubaska, Southwest Regional Creative Media Leader at Gensler. And it's your show.
Yeah, I'm going to, sorry, I have to borrow the mic from Eric because we're sharing a mic together, which
do you
is...
Do you want me to switch seats with him?
Yeah, Eric, can we switch seats so you can sit next to me so that way we can exchange a mic a little bit easier?
That'll be great.
Thank you. Oh, here we go.
Oh, now it's
all
the second mic. Okay.
Pass the baton. Thank you. Thanks so much for coming, guys. This is very, very exciting. I'm really happy to be here. We got a great introduction, but I figured we'd give a little bit more time to know a little bit more about what all of us do. So kind in the introduction, my name is Chris Nichols. I've been doing what I do for a long time. This is my third career. I started off as an architect. I went to Rice Architecture School and then went to Gensler and worked there for a long time as an ArcViz person. And then I went into visual effects after that. There's a portrait that is of me behind there. That's not my work. that was done by a good friend of mine that was revealed last week. But yeah, I really love computer graphics. I really love what everything that's happened in computer graphics in the architecture world, in the environment world. And I think that based on the real nice diversity that we have on this panel, we're looking forward to really hearing a lot about where environments are going and how architecture and environment design and environment representation and illustration is going in the next few days. So thanks so much. It was really, really great to have this. But I'm going to move on. And Eric, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Nope.
Okay.
Okay, so first, I'm extremely jet-lagged. We arrived yesterday. I'm coming from Paris, France, not Tennessee or the real Eiffel Tower. So my name is Eric Debroche-Descombes. I'm an architect. I'm a trained architect, still doing architecture. I'm doing architectural visualization for 25 years now. I'm running a company called Luxigon, which is my kind of second or third one, for like 15 years. Are you seeing? Yeah, okay. damn, it's good. I'm also teaching at Harvard a class called Immersive Landscape that is about using game technology applied to the conception and the representation in landscape and architecture. I am not interested at all into technology, although I have to use it. So I'm a bit old school when it comes to computers and everything. And well, that's pretty much it, I guess.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you.
And now, Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself and about what you do at Kitbash and what Kitbash 3D is all about.
Absolutely. So my name is Mike, and I'm the head of 3D at Kitbash 3D. And our goal is to enable and inspire artists by helping them create bigger, better, and faster environment scenes. So we sell packs of basically themed kits of all the building parts. So these are two images I made a while ago using the Ancient Temples kit and Cyberpunk props, and put both of them together in about an hour and a half a piece. And so that's what we're about, making the production part and kind of the unwieldy modeling tasks as simple and fast as possible so you can get your ideas out. I'm trained as an architect, my background. And for about 6 or 7 years, I was an ArcViz artist only, working for several different firms before opening my own Three Marks. And as of the last year and a half, it's been all Kitbash 3D.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love your products. I think your products are really cool, and specifically how it enables people to look at matte painting and creating things really fast and giving them the tools to do that. So it's a really great product. I really highly recommend you guys check it out.
Thank you kindly.
And Joy, you and I have known each other for years, and you're now at AR Wall. So tell us a little bit more about what you do at AR Wall and what your title is over there, because it's changed recently,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it has. I'm now CG Art Director at AR Wall, and I do not have a architecture background, but I do have a video game environment background, and oh yeah, it's a bunch of pictures of me in front of our big LED wall. So basically what AR Wall is a startup working on an augmented reality technology for virtual production and marketing. So basically using real-time environments to film against versus a green screen. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, Joy's big, and whenever I have questions about environments in the gaming industry, Joy has been a great resource to me. So thank you so much for doing that. And Nick, tell us a little bit about your background.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nick Hyatt. I'm an art director, concept artist, matte painter for the entertainment industry. I started out kind of fine arts and with a minor in architecture, and I wrongly thought architecture would have been way too rigid and too much math involved, so I kind of flipped over to the entertainment side, and now I kind of dabble in the both. I do a lot of architecture design as well as visual effects for matte painting, for films, games, and TV. And I guess my first part of my career, I started out working in all the studios around town, Digital Domain, Sony, and about 7 years ago, I started my own little shop, and we focus on just concept art, map painting and 3D for games, TV, and cinematics.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. And Belle, what about yourself?
Hi, I'm Belle. I'm a 3D artist from London. Currently, I live in London. I'm probably going to move to New York in a couple of months, if it works out. I was working for Recent Spaces. You can see a couple of images there. I also do interior design if it's necessary. It's a part I really like to do. And yeah, my background is in architecture. I didn't finish my degree because then I fell in love with visualization and yeah, moved into this career path, which I really enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's awesome, Belle. And what about you, Megan? What's tell us a little about yourself.
Hi. So I work at Gensler, which is known for being the world's largest, most profitable architecture firm. And I do regional creative media there. So for our offices in LA, San Diego, Newport, Phoenix, Denver, and Las Vegas, I work on moving our virtual and augmented reality efforts forward. So this was a proof of concept I built where each card in a deck of playing cards was a different building we had done. And then you could see with computer vision what the building looked like in 3D.
That's great. And I think this is a perfect segment into our first question that I'm going to ask the panel right now. This is, you know, there's an enormous history, specifically with architectural illustration, about representation of space and how it's represented. And what's happening recently over time, you know, traditionally architectural illustration has been a single still, right? And there's that old saying that, you know, picture says 1,000 words and tells a story about what's going on. But then there was something called, you know, video, and people start to make videos about stuff. Even more recently now, we have real time, where there is no video. The user has their own path through this representation. So my question is, as you guys all think about representing space, representing the environments that you're looking at, can we start to think of the evolution of illustration? Is illustration more than a still? Is illustration a video, or can it be represented as an entire environment, can be an illustration that anyone is free to move around? So I'm going to bring that up to the panel. What do you guys think about illustration, and can it be more than a still?
Well, I'm a huge believer in VR for environments. I worked in film also. I worked on The Lion King and virtual production there, the Avatar sequels also. And being able to view a film set that's previously all digital in a 3D space and get that sense of space and where the characters are and where they're going to film and like camera movement and everything, and be able to like sense that sense of scale once you're actually surrounded by it, it's kind of mind-blowing in comparison to a still. So I think that's a huge step forward. It's like virtual reality, augmented reality, being able to actually sense, get that feeling in a space.
What do you guys think about it?
I mean, I think that we're going through a really interesting time, and I think it parallels what happened like about 10 years ago, where as a renderer, anytime you wanted to set something up, you'd set it up, you'd hit render, you'd wait 5 minutes, you'd get a cup of coffee, you'd see it, you'd make a change, hit render again, you wait and you wait. As renderers have sped up and we've gotten real-time rendering engines and everything else, that all is, you can do it as you're looking at your rendered image. And it allows you, even if you're just making a still, to really nuance every little bit of it and zone every part in. And I think that as we move to this next step of actually being able to be in the space in real time, actually looking around in 360 degrees and seeing everything, what that brings to it from a design standpoint is an amazing ability to really understand a space before it's built and make live, real-time reactions and design decisions whilst doing so.
But do you think that there is something to be said about the still? Does the still still represent something that's important in that situation? And yes, please, Eric.
No, we have an education for stills. And that's, in my opinion, what is the most important. I mean, we have a picturesque culture. Well, it's a bit more complicated when you are immersed in 3D. For the moment, there is not really an education, so it means that it's still not giving the correct sense of space. And also, it is mandatory that you are processing the information in real time. while it still permits you to think about it, to take your time, to think about other things than just the space itself. And this is why I'm strongly believing that because it's the smallest common denominator, I don't know if it's a word in English, but like it's the easiest way to transmit space for the moment, it is also the one that we can understand the most. That's why, I mean, it would be a very good discussion to know if VR is really helping architecture or actually deserving it. I'm sorry to be a bit disruptive. I told you I'm a bit old school, so I tend to I go slow into technology. But I'm seeing it when I'm teaching that finally the sense of space is not something that you get immediately. It needs an education. It requires to understand how things are done, and I don't think it's yet the moment. But you know, I'm wrong most of the time, so it's okay.
Well, I agree with you because in some cases, you know, I always make the joke about I can give my dad a Leica, but he's not going to take a good picture with it, right? So it says, you know, the way that you frame a picture is very important. And if you give complete freedom to move around, it's hard to take a good picture. So framing the picture is still an art form that I think that's, am I right in interpreting what you're saying?
Part of what I'm saying.
Okay, and I think that's an important part to make. However, the need for that still becomes less. So while the still is a good representation, the fact is that there's an enormous amount of real-time interaction that's happening. So how do you deal with that real-time, and how do you still make it something important in some way?
Well, I think just because it's VR and we're able to go photoreal, we don't need to. So if anyone saw Keelograph's amazing Michael Graves virtual reality experience, it has like these painterly qualities to it. You're still making a decision every time when you're representing something. And I think we don't need to go for that hyperreal, that photoreal, and you're still conveying mood and atmosphere and taking care of transporting someone to that other environment. Where I do think it wins over the still is in people's ability to visualize. So many of our clients, the people that we're working with and we're helping to understand these future realities, they might see a picture and they might sort of get what it's about, but they aren't really understanding the building or the project. And I think we'll get more buy-in in communities where we're trying to build something if they really get to see the whole building. So that's why I really like AR and VR, because it gives people that capability to sort of get it in a visceral way. Whereas with just one rendering, people understand you could be hiding something. You're not showing the mechanical units. You're blocking out, you know, other parts of the environment.
Right, right. Anything else? Yes, please.
Yeah, I think one of the things that excites me the most about virtual or AR and VR is the ability to have virtual galleries. Like, say, for instance, I make an illustration or a piece, and I can geotag it to one location only, let's say Melrose and La Brea, right? And you have to physically go there to see the piece with your phone, right? So now you've created an interactive exhibit that only exists in one place. You can geotag it, it's only here, and you have to physically go there to see it, right? So then I can make this great artwork that truly exists in only one simple place, and they could draw people to there. And it's just something, having a virtual gallery, something we've never had before. And the ability to geotag your art and place it in one location to make like a gallery is something that we haven't quite seen yet, and this is going to be really awesome. And we saw it Pokemon Go, right? But when you can make your own gallery, and here's my geotag, here's where it is, if you want to see it, go there with your phone and log in, and it's there.
Yes. I think it's interesting. There's actually a lot of geotag art that's starting to happen, AR arts. A lot of people are creating AR content that's only exists through location. So that's a really good idea and an interesting concept. Be very curious where that goes, you know, when you start thinking about that stuff. But this leads me to my next question about story, right? Story is an important part of the illustrations that we make, of the spaces we make, right? Because you're talking about, like, when you see that, you're trying to make a story, right? As illustrators, what our goal is to, if you give that one image, you're basically looking at that image and you derive a story that you see from that concept, right? That's one of the things that I loved when I was in architecture school, when I did renderings, as I was trying to tell a story, which probably led me to go into films because I was more interested in the story than the actual buildings. I actually didn't care about the buildings. So how do you tell a story through these new mediums, and what are the tools that you use to try to give that story a content that people get excited to feel?
Well, I need to talk first again, but this is kind of what my talk tomorrow is going to be about, is being able to use 3D in a way of storytelling, as in the same sense that you would build a level in a video game. When you build a level of a video game, you have full 360 around you, and the player can go anywhere in most of these games and look in any direction, but there's still a path that they need to follow. So there's visual cues and like different lighting direction and different colors and different like pathing systems and different ways that people who make games have always been able to control which direction people are looking and what they're interacting with. So we just need to be able to relate that back into something that would start as an illustration.
Right. I mean, this is a common thing that a lot of people don't realize when they're even playing games, that they're being guided along visually.
It's all
like
in the subconscious.
Right. It's in the subconscious. The common theme, for example, for those of you who may not know, when you're playing a video game, is they use the color yellow, right?
Yes.
The color yellow is commonly used to guide the player to go into that direction or to seek something out, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a common theme that's used, that takes your subconscious and guides you toward that area. But you can do the same thing in a still. You could guide someone to do something in that direction. Mm-hmm. So I want to dive deeper into story, and you know, even going to some of the stuff that Kitbash does, is you have all these elements that you're trying to tell a story throughout that process. So what are some of the tools that you can use in your environments to guide the users to think about a narrative that they may drive when they see it?
Well, I think there's kind of two really interesting parts about that, which is there's one which is guiding someone, which is trying to either you're guiding someone's eye through an image through contrast, light, and color and saturation, or trying to guide them through a game by, you know, yellow or other wayfinding ways that, like, clearly I'm supposed to walk towards the big thing in the distance. The thing that I actually think is quite a bit more interesting when it comes to telling story in an image is that until you get someone to start imagining something in an image specifically, it's usually either what can I not see, or what just happened, or what is about to happen. And Scott McCloud talks about it extensively in Understanding Comics, which is that the magic of a comic book is the space in between the panels. Right, so if you see his example, if you see a picture of a guy with an axe raised behind someone's head, and then the next frame is just the picture of the house from an aerial bird's eye with the speech bubble, screaming, we've all committed a murder in our brains, right? Like, he didn't show us that guy's head getting hit by an axe, but we all kind of imagined it. And that's, to me, is the power of imagination in still storytelling. And you see it also in architectural photography. There is a famous Cabusier photo of the kitchen at, I believe, Villa Savoie, where there's a loaf of bread that's been cut, there's a door that's slightly ajar, there's a window that's ajar, something just happened, and when you look at it, you don't know what that is, but your mind starts kind of trying to figure it out. And I think that that's the really exciting part, is that when an individual starts to imagine something, I think that that's one of the challenges right now, particularly in architecture, which is if you're trying to show a space and you want to do it in VR, you don't have the option of framing everything, right? Because they can walk and look around the corner. And I think that controlling gameplay so that where you go is one way to do that. But I think that Esther, Dear Esther, the video game, did a really good job of letting you go wherever you wanted while guiding you towards an end. And the whole time you're trying to figure out what happened. If you're familiar with that, you just walk around an island and you kind of vaguely figure out why you're on an island by yourself. Mm-hmm. But it's the imagination that makes it so captivating. And so I think when you think about environment design, it's not just can we make a really cool building or a really cool scene or environment or landscape. I think it's how can we use that to suggest something bigger? What can you do, if you're doing a cityscape, to have the viewer start to imagine the people that live there? Because that's where it starts to get really exciting, I think.
Yeah,
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, okay, quickly. Yep. I will agree with you for, it's not often I'm agreeing. actually, this is really a very interesting question. I'm not saying that because I'm being nice. There are two things. You can see a building as being geometry. You can also see a building as being a series of functions. Okay, so this is, if you take for example a Bruegel paintings, you have the geometry that is around, and you have everything that is happening around the geometry. There is a bit of a risk in representing architecture like that, although there is a temptation because it's making it entertaining. By showing more of the function than actually the geometry itself. Where it's interesting in VR and video game is that actually you can consider that a game is actually a form of architecture. So it means architecture is exactly like that. You, by the geometry, are guiding people into a building or guiding the functions into a building. A game is exactly made on the same principle, that the game, if it's intelligently done, is actually a form of architecture in itself. This is why it's kind of overlapping on the two sides, that it is a bit architecture, a bit representation, but I think there is a lot that has to be done. I mean, this is, although I believe strongly into illustration as being a form of very simplistic entertainment, I see everything that is new technology like VR, like video game, as being a new form of architecture, and actually not a new form of illustration. If I don't know if it's clear what I'm saying. In my head it is, but maybe it's jet lag that's doing that. But this is, I mean, I would feel more like an architect doing a video game than actually like an illustrator. Because this need for organization, this need to create a geometry where players will be around, is actually an act of architecture and not necessarily an act of illustration.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, it's the virtual reality space or game space is an entirely new real estate space, right? Like, yeah. So this is a place where architects can thrive and don't have to deal with code.
So
there is an absolute space in this area.
It's even better is that there are buildings that exist in real life that will disappear because they don't really make sense anymore in real life. I think of a church, for example. In the virtual world, a church can be accommodating 1 billion people, while a church for real has a specific location. So there are buildings that are kind of, I would say, born to disappear. Stadium, everything that needs to be in a physical location. And this is where architects actually should invest that field. And this is, as an illustrator, when I'm finding myself on the edge of two things, that I can combine both, be an architect and illustrator, and then it makes sense into a virtual world.
Megan, I want to ask you a real question.
Oh, I was going to say, I have a story about storytelling with the stadium that might be relevant.
Please.
So. Are there any soccer fans in the audience? No, a couple. Oh, cool. Okay. So for those of you that don't know, Los Angeles just got a soccer team, LAFC. And when they were deciding to create this team, it didn't exist before. So a group of owners said, we're going to bring a team here, but we're not going to make some other team transfer. We're going to build it from scratch. We're going to build a stadium from scratch. And when they hired us to design the stadium, they also had to figure out, how are we going to recruit players when we don't even have a stadium to show them? You know, we don't have a brand. We don't have jerseys. So as part of the process, when Gensler was designing the stadium, we also designed a virtual reality experience. And with VR, you can just drop someone in from anywhere. Unfortunately, if you're not thinking about the user experience, it's usually like up in the sky, and you kind of fall down somewhere on the site and start walking around. But what we did was we started in the locker room. So a potential player, a recruit, would put on a headset. He'd look around. He'd see his locker with his name on it. He'd open it. There was his jersey with his name on it. And as he walked out onto the field, he'd hear a cheering crowd in the headphones. And then on the field, up on all of the screens, were video footage of him playing soccer at other games. So in this case, the VR experience, which was determined totally by the architecture, was also kind of how they were able to put together this whole team, change people's careers, bring them there, give the fans someone to root for. So it was just something that was, I think, so much more powerful and that might never have been accomplished if they were saying, hey, come to our cool stadium, here's some pictures of it. But instead, they were able to really project themselves into their future, being in Los Angeles, being a part of this community, and playing for it.
I think that's a really good point, because what you just basically described is a first-person experience, right?
Yeah.
And architectural architectural illustration is generally a third-person experience, and both of them are very valid, but first-person experiences is a completely new medium as a story narrative that I think that is interesting to think about where architectural representation, I'm not even going to call it illustration anymore, but representation of architecture can be. So I think it's a really interesting concept of what that is. Bill, I want to ask you a few questions.
Yep.
Specifically about like what tools do you use to try to tell a story in your illustrations?
So I would say I'm obsessed with composition. So composition is the most important part for me in the beginning. I try to frame the picture and I try to put hints in it, which forms like a story, basically, and I hope that the person who looks at it understands and gets a feeling for the space, and yeah.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, it's very similar to what we were talking about earlier about creating elements that tell a story, right?
Yep.
But that's a third person experience, which, by the way, is completely valid. Mm. Movies are third person experiences and are extremely emotional. So
yep.
You can get an enormous amount of feelings to that. But I think it's important to have both of those elements and consider them when you're talking about story and talking
yep.
about illustration. Excellent. Okay. Now let's move on to the idea of business. This is an interesting part. Yes,
actually,
because it is. You know, sorry, go ahead.
Before we leave AR and VR, I just want to throw out one thing that I think I just had an insight when we were talking about this. One of the cool things about AR and VR is it is emerging, right? So that means there's new things that we don't know yet and we'll have to figure out. There's known unknowns inside of there. I know how to frame a narrative in a 2D image because our ancestors figured it out and wrote it down and I read it, right?
Right.
So those things are solved. Light, you know, perspective, contrast, you can draw our IN, but how do you draw your IN? In a virtual world. These are things we don't know, but these are things that we're going to figure out, us, because it's emerging. So it's something we should consider ourselves lucky, number one, that we're here at this time, because this technology is emerging. And like you were saying, you start with a composition. Well, how do you do a composition when the camera is you and you can move around?
Yeah.
Right? These are things that now we got to think about, which we'll have to solve these problems moving forward. And it will be us that does this.
Well,
so we should consider ourselves lucky for this.
I mean, it's the same. It's the thing like filmmaking, right? When they started making films, they never knew how to edit anything, right? They would basically tell the story four times from different perspectives because they didn't know how to jump cut between that area. So the whole idea of the invisible style of editing, which we've all taken for granted for so long, and we all know how that works, the story between the frames, right? We know what that story between frames, because we're so used to the cinematic experience. That came through education from watching films as young kids. But before, they didn't know how to do it. It's the same tools, same things that we're going to have to learn in the VR space. And so we're a bit like kids trying to figure it out at this point, right? But I do want to talk about the fact that, you know, architectural visualization specifically has been built on a business plan for years and years and years and centuries on. You design a piece of architecture, you would like a rendering for that architecture, it costs you a certain amount of money to build that rendering for that architecture, right? And now, we're in the days where you build the entire thing in to be able to play in real time. So, you can't bill someone $500, $1,000, or whatever you happen to charge for a still. You have to, how do you think about the business of architectural illustration as a business in terms of how do you pay for it in the real-time world?
I just want to say, it's shocking to me. When I go see creative agencies that are making, say, a VR experience for a car company that has an auto show, it's going to be there maybe for 3 days, and Ford has paid them like $600,000 for this VR experience of a single car. And we'll create something, you know, with way more polygons, 1 million square feet, something like that, just for the client to convince them to put a door where we want it to be. You know, like we're doing all this extra work generating these amazing VR experiences, and our payoff is, okay, if you build it this way, I get this building photographed this way one day. So I just think that's kind of funny that we're kind of selling ourselves short with our ability to create these amazing spatial VR experiences. And I just wish there was a way that we could get marketing to pay for it. Part of it, I think, will be solved when owners of facilities are wised up to how to use something like digital twin, maintaining a digital asset over the life cycle of a building, because then they'll see, you know, a payoff for having it. But other than that, if we're just creating it so that someone, you know, decides to go with our design instead of VEing it, it's kind of a shame.
Well, I think the big strength to like making something in VR in real time in the future, when we're able to put more things in VR that are interactable, is that you'll have so much payoff, because instead of making a scene once, you'll be able to actually move that door a little bit while they're looking at it. You know?
Yeah, we can do those things now.
Yeah. But then I think you're getting like so much more bang for your buck when you're actually building a virtual environment in that sort of way. That's the same way I'm experienced with like digital sets for film. You build a set in a certain way. Normally when you build that in real life, it's really difficult to move a window, like move a mountain over if you're doing like an African safari or something. You can move the mountain, and we're going to save so much time and money by able to do that live in camera.
You guys built Lion King all in Unity?
Oh, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. But how do you do that? I mean, you typically build per rendering, right?
Well, I know we are in America here, so the business part is there.
You got to feed your kids somehow.
Yeah, well, you can do that, honestly. Yeah. Our business has these parts of dishonesty embedded into it. My main concern is that, does it help doing better architecture? Because it's a bit. I'm always feeling like weird when we are talking about the visualization part of it. I would say that even if you are the best visualizer in the world, you are still the king of mini golf. Which means that the real job is still architecture. And I'm horrified when there is some sort of, when the visualizer is taking too much space, because architecture is serious, it's a serious work. And to me, this is the most important part of it. And the temptation to show singularities of a building is, in my opinion, extremely dangerous. There is this trend with, for example, photorealism. Realism is not only showing a building in a realistic way visually. It is showing a building in a realistic way politically. It is showing the building in a realistic way philosophically. And the extreme attention that is given to one small part of it, which is it looking good or not in terms of drawing, is, in my opinion, the most dangerous thing we can do. I am the king of the mini golf. It means that the golfers are the architects. I'm just doing shtuk, and I hope that it will be okay.
Okay. All right.
To speak, though, to the business of stills, which is literally what I'm speaking about for an hour and a half tomorrow, and the business of architecture, is that one is that the business of architectural visualization, it's very much still alive. Right, like the idea of being able to charge $500 and $1,000 or significantly more than that is still healthy. And I think what is changing the most about that industry right now is that, one, is that doing one still is no longer enough, right? Doing one hero image or one image of a living room is no longer enough because, A, it's easy to do multiple stills now, and one still can only tell so much of a story, right? There's a limit to how much you can tell. Maybe it's 1,000 words of story, maybe it's a little bit less, maybe a little bit more. And I think what, I don't think the still is ever going to go away as far as something that's being used, whether it's still in print media for sidewalk sheds, you know, photography still exists, even though we've had film for a very long time. But what I think the way that the industry is changing is the expectations on visualization artists, which is you need to give me more than just a single still, and you need to tell more of a story than you have in the past. And by the way, I'd also like you to either animate that image so that we can use it in motion graphics or move it into VR so that we can also create a VR experience. So it's not, I don't think that it's a, the still is going away because we have these other technologies. I think there are new expectations for what that still is and how it's being created. And it's being augmented by all of these additional technologies that are amazing and add to the experience as opposed to replace it.
Yes. But I think there's still like, the idea of charging per still, right, is still something that's happened.
It's going away.
I'm
arguing that it's going away.
So do you guys all agree that charging per still is going to go away?
No.
No.
And you disagree as well. I can hear it in your tone that you didn't know exactly how you were going to handle that moment. Right?
I'm just a moderator.
Yeah, well, moderate it. That's your job to tell him he's wrong.
No. I agree with you. I agree with you on the other time that, like, you know, the ability of actually framing a still is still an art form. Right, and you're not going to get that necessarily in other ways. I think you know the beautiful stills we saw from Bell, for example. That's an art form that you can't just basically expect people to do out of instinct. You know, I can't give my, sorry to bash on my dad so much, but I can't basically show my dad like a 3D scene in Max and say make a beautiful still. You know, like he's not going to know how to do that. Yeah,
I would argue that there's this idea when you charge by still, if you're saying I'm going to do a still of a living room or your kitchen, right? And the idea if you charge, I'm going to charge you, X thousands of dollars for this one image, and the result that you get from the developer or the architect in those situations, particularly when it's selling an actual product that's being built, is we want to see the whole thing. We're paying a ton of money, and we want to see every corner. And so your options as a visual artist of telling the story the way you want to goes away because you can only give them one, right? They're only paying for one. And so if you go in with a different approach, which is, okay, we want to see the whole kitchen, and I'm going to tell that via two vignettes as opposed to one still, which 10 years ago would have been doubling the amount of work and now is fractionally improving it, means that I can tell the story of the kitchen better because I'm not being constrained to only one image to do so.
Moderate him.
Well, there are definitely some things you said. I mean, you can look at some beautiful stills, right? You can look at stuff that, you know, that some amazing architecture visualization companies have been able to do. They're like, that you're not going to get that out of an interactive experience. That still itself is going to be important. And Eric, you agree with this, I'm assuming. Yes.
I agree with you all the time. Okay, now. Okay. I found a friend in you, and yeah.
I think that there is value that's being added to a real-time experience that cannot be ignored, that which is, I also agree with you, that needs to be emphasized, right? Even just, you know, talking to Joy and virtual production, right? Like the idea of virtual production and what it does is like, look, I get it, but I want to, you know, I'm in shooting a shot in Lion King and I want to move a tree, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You can move a tree much easier in that world than you can in the actual Serengeti, right? Mm-hmm. You can't say, you know what, move that tree over there, and you know what, can you make it 3 o'clock instead of 12 because the sun is too high? You can do that in virtual production. Mm-hmm. That adds value to the process that you can visualize stuff.
Yeah.
And even, you know, if you can create an interactive experience that you're doing, for example, you know, in VR at Gensler, you can basically go, it's like, oh, you want to experience the stadium, experience it this way. By the way, do you want to see what it's like to play, you know, a soccer game during the day versus night? You can experience that, and that adds value to that experience. So I think that both things have to do with, and what you're basically saying, it comes back to what I was already talking about, first-person experience, third-person experience. Being able to interact with something becomes something very important. So I think both are valuable. I still agree with you, Eric, that the art is important, and that being able to understand how to frame something correctly, and that comes from both the quality and experience.
But the question is really literally, will Gensler do better buildings because they use a technology, or will they sell the building better using the same technology? The problem is literally, will there be better buildings? The problem is into the architecture. I mean, we just represent it. Again, mini golf stuff. So is it a tool that helps doing better building, or is it a tool that helps selling buildings?
I think
that's literally an issue that I'm running into. I mean, this would be my talk.
I think it's both, honestly speaking, because I know that I've heard it from many, many people that talk to people that, the big designer, the big company refuses to put on the VR headset, right? And they refuse to do it. And then they put it on, and then they're like, oh, okay, I see. Oh, wait, is that how tall that door is? Wait a minute. And then they start to realize that this is the first time they've ever seen anything at scale, and they start to realize that some of the design decisions that they've made may not necessarily have been the correct ones. And that's why it is making design a better
place. But again, the building is not just the geometry. So it solves geometrical problem, but not necessarily all the other stuff that has to be addressed in terms of politics and everything. So it's part of the visualization. This is where the still is actually extremely powerful, because the still permits the brain to evaluate what he's saying and then imagine what is around it. There is the immediacy. Thank you. Immediacy of the VR experience is kind of tricking a bit this mental ability that you have to. Oh, this is weird. I don't know if I'm too old for that.
We're all too old. All told. Okay, I want to get to our last question before we get to the audience Q&A, and I'll walk around with these guys. But we have a lot of different people from a lot of different areas that have a lot of different experience, et cetera. And I think it's really interesting that we have people, from the gaming industry, people from the matte painters, and all these different ideas. Do you think that because the thing that you guys all have in common is you guys are interested in representing environments or designing environments, be it in virtual space or in reality, do you think that there's something that we could all learn from each other? What are some of the things that you think that you could give to, Joy, what could you give to the architecture community coming from games? Or what do you guys think you could give to the gaming industry as an architect? And how does the cross-pollination of these different industries could work with each other more fruitfully as we move along here?
I think a lot of games still look like South Park or something like that. Like they're not a beautiful space you want to spend time in. There are some really amazing, gorgeous games. But when you look at some of the offerings like Altspace VR or other experiences, you feel like you're in a cartoon.
Mm-hmm. They're really ugly.
Yeah.
They're really ugly. Have you guys gone to the home space for like the Oculus? It looks like the worst ski lodge. I mean, what the hell? I mean, this is the ugliest. I mean, it's like, why are they think this is good design. This is,
see? Yeah, that has to do with
that's where we can help.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because architecture does a really good job of making simplified forms really beautiful, because when you're in a space in an Oculus where you have to hit a certain frame rate or else you get sick, they make really low-poly things, and they don't necessarily know how to make that low-poly, just couple walls look as beautiful as an architect would. Mm-hmm. So I completely agree with that.
I would love to have, the welcoming room be like a Leibniz wood space instead.
Yeah, and for VR to work, for it to hit a billion users or whatever, Facebook is hoping for, they need to be spaces you want to spend time in. Mm-hmm. And that's what architects have known how to do for thousands of years. So,
Eric, do you think that the architect has a role to play in the virtual reality space?
I think this is where we should be quickly. It's gravity is awful. Gravity is terrible. Yeah. Gravity is fucking up everything all the time. Buildings are heavy, and it's annoying at some points. In virtual reality, buildings are not heavy. They don't have gravity, and so they can be extremely experimental. You use architecture for building computer system. You use architecture for everything. Architecture is not necessarily into making buildings. Architecture is organizing a space, whatever space it is. So I think that this is actually where most of the architects, a bit what I'm telling to the students, instead of being obsessed of building buildings that are, by the way, very often miserable, you should deploy your ambiguous taste where it's not dangerous, which is virtual reality. At least if it's bad, I mean, you can erase it and it's done.
Right.
But the virtual worlds and things like that will happen. They will happen because it's a necessity that they are happening. And the technology is kind of ready. It's not here yet. Because even wearing headsets, is your eyes are sweating. After 10 minutes, you have enough of it. Finally, even reality is better. But it's I think that when the technology will be ready, there is a real opportunity to do something in virtual world for architects and also for illustrators, which is kind of very interesting.
Well, I think it's like this really interesting space where it's not just about creating a beautiful, simple space, even though that's part of it. There's also the function of the space, right? Like, right now, I think it's very easy to think of, okay, we're going to set up a nice landing screen that we can live in VR. But I think as we move more and more of our lives and our daily tasks there, it's not just about having something that's beautiful and pleasant to be in, but also one that's functional. And I think that fundamentally, the design of architecture is to meet those two needs, right? Is that you want it to perform a certain function in a certain way, and you want it to do it in an experience that is enjoyable for what it might be. And I think that architects have a unique way of thinking through that problem. And I think that those of us playing, you know, mini golf and doing concept art and matte painting and film have a unique set of skills for how to actually do that visually pleasant in a not built environment.
That's a good point. Bell, what do you think you could bring to the world of games? Like, what are the skill sets that you have through the things that you've done that you could bring more sensibility to the gaming world, as an example?
I can definitely bring my interior skills into games, and my sense for like light and textures and all those things. But I think it's more interesting the other way around, because what I love about VR is, or games, is how they make someone feel emotions when you play something. And I think that's something which is probably missing when we create buildings in VR, to feel emotions when you go through the space.
Yeah, it's strange. You know, I went through a long period. I used to play video games, and then I went through about like 15, 20 years where I stopped playing video games and I started playing them again. And I realized the emotions, just like you said, are high. Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's a real, like, you really get into it, right? I mean, even if you're playing a game that's by rails, like, I always use these two games as an example. One is BioShock Infinite, which I think is incredible. Very it's on rails, but you experience all the architecture, which is extraordinarily unique in that area,
yeah.
But you hear the sound and you follow that narrative, and there's an incredible experience that you have there. Also, sound, I think, is something interesting.
Yeah.
We never think about sound, right? But it just being able to feel an emotion as you're in that space is really kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Nick, let's talk a little bit about matte painting. How do you think matte, because I used to be, you know, do architectural renderings, and then I used to go and work in the film industry, and I see these people like banging out matte paintings like in 10 minutes that look like, where did that come from, right? It's just amazing. What is a skill that I think architectural illustrators can learn from, like, making matte paintings? Because that's something that is different.
Yeah, there's a surprising amount of overlap in between design for visual effects, entertainment world, and architecture. Like, between not just our design fundamentals, our principles, and just our software. Like, under the hood, we're all using almost the same thing, which is very surprising to me. Like, I do more modeling in CAD now than I ever thought I would. Right? Like I said, I started out in architecture. I said, this is probably too rigid. I want to go to the more creative side, not understanding that rigidity was just the lack of technology at the time. But there's so much overlap that I think we can bring so much from one another, architecture and entertainment, because we're all using the same thing under the hood, right? Like, to some people, it's a Corvette, but to some people, that's the 380 engine or whatever. Like, we're all using the same tools to make visual images at the end of the day, and there'll be a ton of overlap for all of us. We could all could benefit if we could just knock that bridge down, because I honestly don't have a ton of architecture friends in my group, but almost everyone in my group's in visual effects, but we all speak the exact same language. So there should be less of a disconnect between our disciplines, I think.
Yeah, I think it's really good. I think there's a lot of things that architecture visualization could learn from matte painting. in terms of how it's being done. And you're right, there's a lot in common, but I think there's a lot of things that are really interesting. I love looking at a bunch of concept art. So
yeah, and even map painting itself has changed over the years. Like, you know, 30, 40 years ago, they used to paint these things in a three-story warehouse so they could stand on the second floor and paint the top half and then wheel it up and down. And now it's done with some dude in a camera in Photoshop, right? So yeah. Even the technology has allowed so much faster creation for map paintings that the game has changed. And when the speed of these things got to be, you know, through the roof, versus it would take 3 months to paint one painting, now you can do one in a day with the right photos and the right 3D scene. And then because the speed is faster, the demand got faster, right? So you're in this weird bit where the demand is there because the speed is there, and then, you know, you're going to get in this weird circle with production where I saw you do it last week, in a week and a half, do it again. And now it's a week, and now it's right. 3 days and 2 days, but yep. the technology will eventually allow us to do this, which it is now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just because I've noted we're going to go a little long, I want to make sure I can have enough time to open up the questions to the audience, so I'm actually going to walk off the stage here. Is there anyone who has a question from the audience here?
So my question is it going through the microphone? So my question is related to what Chris just said about mud painting, because on Instagram, for example, I follow more mud painters than actual renders, and I do watercolor rendering, and it's mind blowing how simple colorways, tonal ways. Composition-wise, it's designed. And yet, when I look through the posts of many mud painters, and I see it sometimes hand sketches, they look nothing like that. They look quite poorly done. So I'm just trying to figure out what exactly missing. What's missing? What can I do to make my drawings look like that? Because obviously I do have skills, but I cannot figure it out. I see how you guys, like somebody say, well, I just did it over lunch, my quick exercise, and I just study and photograph, and I just did that. And obviously it's very good analytical skills, analyzing how light goes, but I don't see that at all among hand renderers, and that's exactly what Chris said. So, and again, that's I guess I'm just repeating the same question. What's the difference? How to get to that point?
Practice, I guess, is number one, right? But I think one of the things about map painting is you kind of have to master a whole lot of disciplines in one specific thing. You need to know lighting, atmosphere, texturing, Z depth. You need to learn a lot of things to do this. So that's probably why you're seeing a lot of great map paintings, is because to be a good map painter, you kind of need to master a lot of the discipline, right? But, I mean, I'm actually the opposite. My feed, I'm a map painter, but my feed's full of architecture. So I just scroll, I'm like, cool, oh, look at that, that's great. So I think, like I said, there's a blend between where we can all share. But I do think that's one of the symptoms of what you're saying about map painting, is you kind of have to master a lot of disciplines, right? You need to know modeling, lighting, texturing, all this stuff. And perhaps that's why there's a lot of great map paintings out there. I mean, I have a hard time looking at it in the morning. I'm like, God, that's awesome. I got to do this. And there is a lot of great work out there, which is super inspiring, but also at the same time, a little shameful, because it's like, God, this guy's amazing. And he's like 28, I'm 40. How's he doing this, right? So it's, you know, it's just there to make you hungry, I guess, right? For me, anyway. I look at ArtStation and it makes me hungry. I'm like, okay, close. I got to go to work.
I just want to note that Max and I worked at Gensler 20 years ago. It's just shocking for me to see, like, oh my God.
Can I add something to that, Chris?
Sorry, go ahead.
I think that there's also something that matte painters and concept artists do really, really well. Because I understood you right that you don't see that in renderings as much. Was that what I understood? You see it more in matte, you see the beauty in matte painting and concept art and less in rendering. Was that?
What's that? Well, okay. So, okay. One. So,
that's a mic.
Mud painting sometimes can be even not so realistic. It could be very blocky, just basic geometrical shapes. So like you're looking at the sky and it's just geometrical clouds and geometrical trees, but it has something which always catches my eye, and I think it's, I can't quite pinpoint it. It's definitely tonal, definitely good color combination, like cool versus warm, and a lot of these kind of studies. And but I'm puzzled, and I'm like, how is that? It's the same tools pretty much as just digital paint, but it's all the same.
I think there's something to be said that concept artists and matte painters, especially ones that started with some type of 2D background, whether in digital painting or traditional painting, have to come to a very clear understanding for themselves of light and color and harmonies. That if you start in just 3D, you can go in and you can put a sun in and you can press render and you get lights and colors and you can just kind of stop there. And I think Eric's work at Luxagon, both as a studio and individually, is an example of a very fine control within renderings of lighting and color and mood. And I think that one of the reasons that I love matte painters and my shelves are filled mostly with concept art books is that it's a very intentional choice on how they do color and how they do composition. It's all because it's fundamentally starting from an idea of I'm going to place this there at this color, saturation, and all those things, is that you have a deeper understanding of all of those fundamental art basics. Whereas if you start in 3D and you only work in 3D, if you don't work for it, you don't develop that.
Isn't that kind of, if you look at a mirror rendering as an example, right? The mirror rendering has the guts to not show you the building.
Yeah.
Right? It shows you the fog, the building hiding in the fog, right?
So and they have some that are painted.
Right, and so that's because they're telling a story that's different and it evokes an emotion, et cetera. So the story there is much more closer to a matte painting, right? So you don't just say, I'm going to show you the courtyard and all the amenities of this courtyard. That's not the story you're trying to tell, right? That's not a matte painting. You're not going to do that in a movie.
It's very hard to make that exciting.
Yeah, but it's functional, right?
Here's where you walk.
Great. I think that's a really good question. Thank you, Max, so much. Is there another question? I know there's one over here.
Hi. Or here. So my question is actually a dilemma we have at our office right now, and it involves the creation of stills and doing videos and VR and so on for marketing purposes for real estate. So I don't know. 20 years ago, it used to be that we received the architectural drawings at schematic stage, and we had to create a set of renderings. And we all know that at schematic stage, there's always a limited amount of information. So our task was always to have in like full conversation with the architect to be able to fill in the blanks where we didn't have enough information. But as we start getting videos and then VR, that means that there are many different blanks that we have to fill in. And those become kind of critical when you're using these elements as part of the marketing material. So one project that we had just recently, we received all the set of architectural, the schematic design from the architect and landscape designer, and we created a set of renderings, and then we also created this VR experience on a touchscreen where you could go around 8 different blocks and actually walk in between the blocks and so on. Of course, the day of the launch, everyone was like, wow, that looks so cool. You can turn around the building and so on, blah, blah, blah. After a month, then the developer came back to us saying, oh, this tool is not really being successful at selling, but actually it's raised so many questions because there are so much spaces that are not fully designed, right? And that is the actual reality of architecture. When I was working in architecture, we never stopped designing a building until it was even like fully built. But you're always doing changes on construction, on site, on architectural details. So now it's come to a point where we all almost need to have, in order to have these marketing tools, we need to have the building completely fully designed, but that is asking to for the architects to have a contract design, like a building that is already past the design development stage at contract, that mean, but within the budget of schematic design. So that's really it.
But isn't that always been the case? I mean, how many architects or architectural illustrators here have had to fill in the blank for the undesigned parts of the, I mean, right?
So much.
I mean, this is even when you're doing watercolors, you still have to fill in all the blanks, right?
I think that's really the advantage of one single still, that you leave certain things for the imagination. But when you, once you have a 3D model that is of like 8 different blocks, but you have the detail of experiencing that walkway, that pedestrian walkway, if you have to fill in the blanks, that's a lot of work for the marketing company or the visualization company, and also for the architectural company. So my question is always, I love VR. I think that it allows architects to understand the space in 3 dimensions, 4 dimensions, not only on the 2D, but it should be a tool that allows more flexibility and to ease all these different processes. But what I found is that it's more complicated at these stages, especially when you have to bring this marketing piece to a buyer and say, hey, this is what you're going to buy, but it's not fully designed.
Any ideas on comments on that?
Oh, so I'm really excited that you asked this, because I get to respond to something Eric had said, where is Gensler just getting better at selling their designs with VR, or are they making better buildings? And I would argue that we're making better buildings with VR for this very reason. Because clients often can't visualize, it's like my life's mission to tell people about aphantasia, which is the inability to visualize. Something like 10% of people don't see any pictures in their mind. So you're actually raising like the literacy of the client by letting them have the experience in VR. You're making it accessible to people that don't understand what's going on and that are paying for the whole thing. So I think it's really helpful when they do see the unfinished parts, because they get to provide more input. I know Mies van der Rohe says you should treat your clients like little children and just give the design that you want. But I think it's really helping us all think about the end user more and that level of human experience. But as a business solution for that, one thing that we do, even though we love the HTC Vive and the Unreal model, we often will just do the 360 pano exports of several locations and then have a virtual tour. So it's preset, you still have a certain number of images you've designed for, and people are still getting a sense of that VR experience and that imagination, but they don't have the full range to walk everywhere. Because when we do that, maybe the floor slab's not right and we've had a client fall through a hole. Like, that's horrible in a presentation, right? So that's part of why we might just limit it to something like the 360 panels.
Yeah, that's what would be my suggestion also, is just to limit the experience, because you want to be able to, especially in marketing, to control everything that's in that experience. So,
can I also ask, at the earlier stages, like when you're still going through design with clients and stuff like that, and you're showing them in VR, are you doing that in a photorealistic style, or is it stylized in a way that you don't necessarily need to show every, brick?
We'll do white models all the time. So it'll be conceptual massing. And then there are certain designers where they're just not comfortable with letting a client see that yet, so they won't. We'll try to keep it to plans in 2D. And that's fine. Everyone has their different style.
But you can also see the danger of creating entertainment around something that is a bit serious. I will take an example. You know the panels when people are doing movies, you show it to an audience and they say if they like it or if they don't like it. I don't want buildings to become like that. You see, and there is this tendency to ask people, because you have a way to promote it. I don't know exactly if promotion is the right word, but it's a bit of that, by creating a circumstance of entertainment around something that is a bit more serious, that is it looking good or is it not looking good? Because again, just the visual is removing a large part of what a building is
First, because buildings are supposed to last a little, so it means that it can be nice at one point, but not necessarily in the future. And most of the work of the architects is actually envisioning what a building will become in the future, even though it changes destination. Creating an entertainment around it will do only superhero movies in the end, or superhero buildings in the end, because people, this is what they want to see. And Los Angeles is kind of...
What's wrong with entertainment?
We were friends before. Don't start me on that.
No, I mean, what's wrong with entertainment? I think
no, it is terrible. It is
okay.
Really.
Bernard Schumi.
No, entertainment. Entertainment for entertainment is okay.
Would Bernard Schumi's folly are they entertainment in Paris
we are very entertained. If a movie is entertaining, a building should not be entertaining. That's not the point of a building. You see the... Thank you, I have one... You're probably French, right?
I don't think... I'd love to be entertained by buildings. It's probably
But look at Los Angeles. It's only entertaining buildings.
I think...
fake Egyptian temple, fake Chinese stuff. I mean, this is the city of entertainment.
So what's the opposite of entertainment?
Hospital?
Serious?
No, I mean, this is, if you think of it, and even a building is not actually even the right scale anymore. The right scale is urbanism. A building is not an entertainment in itself. Some buildings can. I mean, if it's, an amusement park, then I understand that things are a bit funny. But a building is kind of serious just because it's last. It's a bit like the sense of humor.
Okay, so my definition of entertainment is very different because I don't necessarily think that entertainment is just about being funny.
No, but the word entertainment is a bit off of the serious, for example. I mean, I understand entertainment for a movie. Yeah. I'm a bit more...
I find la jetée very entertaining.
The what?
La jetée.
La jetée, God, really?
Yeah, it's entertaining.
If you have problems sleeping, that's one of the best movies ever made.
Yes, but it's entertainment.
Chris Marker, actually, he was not French. Huh? Don't involve me into this.
No. But the point is that it's an experience that you feel, right? And anything that you experience an emotion through, I find it to be part of entertainment. And I think architecture fits that gift, right?
Okay,
you feel an emotion going through that space.
We can speak about that for 5 hours now.
Sure.
don't have 5 hours. So right. I would let it go.
I just wouldn't necessarily dismiss it as like, that's just a toy and it's entertainment.
No, it's the way it's promoted that is starting to be an entertainment, but it should not. It's just...
I don't think that what Megan's doing is a Disney ride.
I'm not
ride.
Pointing my finger at anyone.
Yeah. You don't. You were saying that it's almost like you're getting people to vote on where this room should be in a building, right? Like a camel is a horse designed by a committee. There's not a logical mind looking at things like entry and exit and function and relationships. But I think that there are often things, because of the limits of communication, that an end user is really going to want in a building that we just don't know about. And when they go through it in VR, they get that. So we were doing a project for someone, and as he looked at the experience in VR, we were already at permit. He'd approved it the whole way through, his team had approved it the whole way through, and then he said, I want to sit in my desk in my office, and as he goes in, he looks around the room, and he says, oh, there's nowhere for my children to sit and do their homework. Mm. So he had always pictured this thing of them coming there after school, having this family time. And we had made no room for that. We had no idea. So those are the kinds of things that I think can be helped by bringing the client into those conversations in an immersive way. When they just, most of them can't read plans. They're pretending to. They're shaking your hand. They're going off of body language.
I admit I'm a bit the Greta Thunberg of architecture now. You stole my youth!
All right. I think we have time for one more question, possibly. Right here. Oh, hold on just a second. There's a mic coming. No.
Good evening. I have a question. I was really wanting to ask you, Belle, is that your name? Because you're with interiors and I like interiors. So I was wondering, what is like one thing that you would change about the industry when it comes to visualization in interiors?
Oh, that's a really hard question. What do I want to change? I mean, I would like to have more women in the industry, obviously, because we've got so many men, and We can can need a couple of more. But in general, I mean, I'm very happy with the industry. I'm very happy with the whole, development of it. I'm doing photoreal pictures at the moment. I never thought I would be able to do this a couple of years ago. And I'm just very excited what comes up next. And yeah, I'm really curious to try some more VR and AR stuff because I think it's a great tool. I've seen something really cool yesterday at the WuHo Gallery, and I thought, oh my god, it's so cool, I want to try this as well. And yeah, I just try to be open-minded for what comes next, basically, and I hope the industry will do so as well, and we will still respect that, like, still images and animations and all the things we love, yeah.
What do you look forward to inside? What is there something you're looking forward to? It's like, I can't wait to try that.
I definitely always wanted to try like Unreal, to be honest. I think it's really cool when we've got the model and I just want to put it in the engine and then walk through it. And yeah, that would be really cool.
That's great. That's great. Okay. One more question. We'll do it right here. Right over here. It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. I know, but it's being recorded and streaming, so we have to have it.
So just going back to what you said, so you guys are creating VR experiences and then just discarding them, like you're not repurposing them?
Often, yeah. I tell people we're the largest holder of virtual real estate in the world because for one building, we might have done 200 versions of it. You know, there just might be tons of models sitting on our servers. And I know that you are going somewhere with this question, but one thing that we had always thought would be really cool is selling these assets to be used for other types of VR experiences. Maybe if people did want to shoot films in a location and they couldn't because, you know, the space wasn't rentable, they could have our architectural model of it to do something like that. But
just give it to Joy and she can put it in. Yeah, she'll take it.
But also, have you guys thought about having, like, is there a viable marketplace for having a developer on staff that would then turn that into a branded experience for your client? Like, actually, like, is there a way to make an additional, instead of having it be like, there's this expectation of I'm going to make an experience, but also, hey, now there's a marketing asset and a user experience that stands alone from our, like, could you
Yes.
Do you guys do that? Or?
So we do have some developers on staff, and we do have a practice area called digital experience design, and their whole goal is to kind of take the physical and the digital and see how they're being merged and how clients might use these things for other applications. So the stadium example that I was talking about, if you go on the App Store, anyone can look up Bank of California Stadium and download the VR model. So it's a great way for fans to see what the experience will look like, leasing people who are renting out different conference areas in the space can show it with table layouts. So if you want to rent it for a lecture, if you want to see how it looks, if you're going to have your wedding there, you can do those things, and it's all this Unity model.
But there's not a significant revenue stream from that yet?
It's something that we're working on, but it's taking time to help explain the value of it to clients. But yeah, it's a big play.
Obviously, I'm in marketing, so I'm like, oh, that's
right.
That's really cool.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks so much, guys. We're going to have to wrap it up, but before we go, there's going to be a... Keeley, can you please come up? We have some closing remarks from Keeley on the panel. Thanks so much to our panel right now.
All right, so thank you very much, Chris, for agreeing to do this. Thank you to everyone who came out. So this event is taking place because it's the 34th annual Architecture in Perspective Conference, which is the annual conference for the American Society of Architectural Illustrators. We may change our name to the American Society of Mini Golfers after this. Great, because we had a great discussion about that this morning. Our conference is going on tomorrow and Saturday. If you wanted to hear some of these wonderful people continuing to talk, you can go to our website and have a look. The conference is just at the Kimpton Everly, and We'd love to have more engagements and more conversations around what is an incredibly important topic for all of us here in Los Angeles, all of us who are passionate about entertainment and architecture, however they mix. It's like peanut butter and chocolate, so it's great if you like. But French don't like peanut butter, so that's a whole thing. and yeah, we just really hope that these discussions can continue. We at Kilograph, we come here and we take courses because we love the possibility that the world of entertainment presents to us. And as was observed, sometimes that passion and that emotion is not always there when we're working in an architectural process. So thank you again to Noman as well for letting us do this. And everybody have a great evening. Thank you so much. Thank you.